Unlabeled Leadership is a volunteer service. We appreciate our guests for their stewardship and remarkable stories. We also appreciate listeners like you who back the show with star reviews and contributions.
Gary DePaul with Unlabeled Leadership. Welcome to episode 161, Karen Zook Leads by Example. Here's a shout out to listeners in Normandy, France, Azovia, Poland, Kiev, Ukraine, and in the United States, Chandler, Arizona, Hayward, California, Palmetto, Florida, Aurora, Illinois, and Bellevue, Nebraska. With that, let's get started. You're about to meet Karen Zook, a thought leader in 21st century leadership. She was raised by a scientist father and a spiritually inclined mother in education. From being in the Scouts to serving as a combat sniper instructor in the Israeli Army, Karen learned some meaningful lessons in life. You might say her journey has been one of constant evolution and self-discovery. Today, as a renowned organizational consultant and a PhD holder who shares the profound insights on how we can harmonize the material and the conscious worlds, Karen emphasizes the pivotal role of mindfulness in shaping successful and innovative organizations. Join me as Karen shares some of her stories about leadership. Part 1, Bringing Ourselves Completely to the Workplace. When I write about work-life balance, I'm not talking about the amount of time you spend at work versus the amount of time you spend away from work. I'm talking about congruency between the two, mainly about emotional congruency. What happens during one part of your life where you're away from work can affect the part at work. If you're having troubles at home, that emotional state can carry over to work, and vice versa, if you're having difficulties at work, that can affect your emotional state at home. There's a belief that you should compartmentalize your away from work from when you're at work. That's not really too healthy. Instead, you should bring your whole self to work. Mike Robbins, author of the book, Be Yourself, Everyone Else is Already Taken, once stated the following. Bringing your whole self to work is about being fully present and authentic in all aspects of your life, including your work. I think that you'll find Karen talks about this more eloquently. Here's Karen to explain.
Everybody dies at the end, but not everybody lives. It resonates within me because I believe that a lot of us are sleepwalking. If we are not connected to our inner world, to our emotions, to our passion, to our heart, feelings, because we are afraid that they overwhelm us. We live alongside life. This is actually what we need to do right now as humanity, as individuals, to be able to connect to our internal world, to our emotions, sensations. Because actually, you know, I think this is the traits that connect to our heart, like compassion, passion, creativity, empathy, that will make us different from the technology that increases as the speed of light right now, right? This is actually a uniqueness. And, you know, defining moment that I had in my life, I remember it like it was a decade ago, but I had a tough conversation with my mom, really an emotional conversation. And I remember a moment that I told her, I'm feeling that I don't feel right now. This was a paradoxical moment, right? Because the fact that I felt my disconnection, I actually felt. So this was part of my journey going even deeper to my inner world and connecting to all those feelings. And from then on, I'm living life and connecting to various kinds of emotion, right? Not always they are happy, joyful, and excitement. Sometimes they're stressful, fear, and anxiety, but that's okay. We learn to live with them. But once you connect it to your complete self, I think life is much more richer. This is actually what the phrase that resonates within me, and actually I follow it.
This phrase could be applied on so many different levels. It could be applied even for people in corporations that go through work, they check in, they do their job, they're indifferent, so to speak, about why they're doing it other than it's okay pay, and then they leave. They don't find purpose in their work. They are not fully engaged, but they're not disengaged. They experience life and let life happen, but it's not really living a full life.
That's so right, because they're not present. They're coming to work, but working, it doesn't sound good in English, but means that, okay, they come in and checking up, but they're not present. They're, as you said, with their emotion, with their passion, they are disconnected. You know, it's like I love to have a metaphor of a pizza. You know, on the pizza, we have anchovy, we have olives, we have tomatoes. So being complete, bringing ourselves completely to the workplace, it means bringing our different added values, right? And not putting some of them, leaving some of them at home. It's not always easy, but I think this is what enables us to bring our added value and to live fully. This is actually what I preach to and do myself, to be more present and show up fully and connected.
That could be applied easily to the concept of work-life balance, not in the sense of time, but in the sense of your passions, your beliefs, your emotions. If you check all that stuff out at the door when you walk into work, you have incongruency. Work and home life affect one another, whether you like it or not. If you're having health issues or a family member's really sick and you go to work, it's really difficult to pretend like everything is fine, and vice versa. If you are having a bad work situation, if it's affecting you emotionally and you go home, it's going to affect your home life as well.
That's so true. And, you know, I really believe we need to tune in and learn to accept ourselves and love ourselves with all the challenges. And once we accept ourselves, we can accept others. And we can't be there also as a servant to others if we're not, first of all, starting with ourselves. So I really believe, you know, leadership is about starting with ourselves, self-management, managing our own internal world, finding the right balance, as you say, creating our own well-being, going after our passion. And when we are in the right place for ourselves, we can enable and help others to be there also. But if we are not listening to ourselves and not tuning in, it's really difficult to help other people to grow and succeed and evolve because we are not there for ourselves. So yes, it's really crucial. And you said about the organization, you know, I think the common theme is that if we bring emotion to the workplace, it will decrease the ROI because we don't have time for it. But paradoxical manner, when people are more engaged, bringing their emotions and passion about what they're doing, even sometimes we need to have conflicts, the ROI will increase, right? Because people will want to succeed. They will really be fully committed to what they are doing. And then there will be trust and communication. And we can achieve everything once people are feel connected in a deeper way, not only doing the job because they need to do it for the paycheck.
Part two, people fully show up when you do. I'm going to share three quotations that will set the stage for the story that Karen shares. Here goes. With the first one, Wei Lin Yin is known for stating, "Courage is vulnerability. Vulnerability is courage. Like shadow and light, neither can exist without the other." Mahatma Gandhi stated, "Happiness is when what you think, what you say, and what you do are in harmony." And Laura Weekly wrote, "Leadership isn't about power for the sake of power, not true leadership. Instead, it deals with modeling behavior you want others to have and with responsibility for being certain the people you lead are treated equitably and with respect." With those quotations in mind, here's Karen with her story.
One of the things that I do professionally is facilitate retreats. In my first retreat that I facilitated, I remember that we went to the top of the mountain meditating and we sat there to meditate overlooking the scenery. And then we went down the mountain. And during the walk, I felt and hurt myself quite badly.
Oh, no.
It was really painful, but I continued business as usual. I didn't want to show my pain, so I held the pain inside. I didn't want to set back the group, so we continued going. I limped. Then when we got to the place, some of the participants told me, "Wow, it looked like you really injured yourself and you continued walking like nothing happened." Then we actually started a conversation and we talked about the fact that I was the leader, and one of the participants said, "You know, I think the fact that you led the group made you think not to show vulnerability." And I actually agreed with him. I said, "Yes, you're right, because I didn't want to draw attention. I didn't feel comfortable being vulnerable." So it was really an interesting reflection and opportunity to learn from what's happened in the moment. And a few retreats afterwards, when I facilitated another retreat, this time I was going through a really challenging times in my personal life. As you said, we can disconnect them, right? And during one of the meditation, I started crying. I let the pain be there and cried and I let it be. We finished the meditation. I wanted to start facilitating a conversation, but you know, I couldn't. The tears were choking myself and I couldn't speak because I was still crying. One of the participants asked me, can I give you a hug? Yes. And then we hugged and, you know, the group looked at us. And this was, you know, a vulnerable moment for me. I'm the leader, I'm the facilitator, and I'm crying and I'm also asking for a hug. But it was, you know, really amazing, the feedback that I got at the end of the retreat, because they told you, you know, the fact that you were vulnerable and authentic, it gave us legitimacy to bring ourselves fully and to show our weaknesses and not to hold back. This is my story about being vulnerable, and it's something that I also evolved toward it, because it's not a common thing for me, you know, in the past. Now it's much more easier for me, but we have to be strong in order to show our weaknesses. And it's the versa versa, how we, the Western world sees, right? It sees vulnerability as a weakness, but I think it's a strength that we have. So this is my story.
In a previous podcast, Kim Campbell talked about courage, and the way she expressed courage was not in the traditional sense, but in the sense of how you described it. Allow yourself to show vulnerability, or putting it another way, allow others to see when she was affected emotionally by something. That same effect that you described, where it seemed to give either permission to be able to express vulnerability from others who work with her. Another way is it modeled that type of behavior, that it's okay to express that type of vulnerability. But so many of us, when we're put in positions, whether it's leading a retreat or it's managing a team, especially when we're new at it, we fall into the trap of thinking that showing emotions or doubt or anything like that is a sign of weakness.
That's all right. And, you know, I really believe that it's actually leading by example, and it starts with ourselves. And it's not easy to model this behavior. You need to really feel comfortable with yourself. So I think it's something that we need to evolve toward this. And it's enough that one leader will give legitimation to it and other people will feel comfortable. You know, one of the managers who went through my course, we also touched upon these themes of vulnerability. And actually, all of us were struggling during the coronavirus transformation, right?
Yeah.
But she also went through a really tough divorce, and she led like 20 employees and they didn't know anything about it. After the course, she told me, you know, I'm going to share with them what I went through and to be vulnerable. I'm going to practice it because it wasn't my comfort zone, her comfort zone. She came back to me and she said, wow, it was amazing. First of all, I shared with them and was vulnerable about what I went through in my divorce. And they were so empathic toward me. But she said, you know, and beyond this, they felt comfortable to show up fully and to share their vulnerability. And one of them said that he feeling really felt really lonely. People showed up and she said, wow, it was so touching. And it created such a deep connection between us that from now on, we can do anything together. It's not a common way to act. So it's something I think we need to practice and get out of our comfort zone and be in the uncertainty, because we don't really know how people react, right? It's like kind of a risk.
I like the way you explain how important it is that when you're in a position to lead, that you need to start with yourself. And I'm thinking of some leadership principles like believe in others, connect with others, put others first. Those principles could be applied to yourself. Believe in yourself, connect with yourself, put yourself first in a different sense than when you're working with other people. It seems if you don't address yourself and your own development and begin to apply leadership principles, I'm not phrasing as well as you did, you're not going to be able to help other people as well.
Yes, I agree with you, because, you know, I think we are the enablers, the containers. It's really start with ourselves. So we need to be able to, first of all, connect to ourselves, because if we want to understand what we are going through, what we are feeling, how can we understand what other people are going through? I think it will really be challenging. It starts with increasing our self-awareness. And once we're aware of our behaviors and emotions and sensations, we can work with them and even speaking emotions. Instead of being angry at someone, I can say, I'm really angry right now. Let's postpone the meeting and meet in 10 minutes, okay? So we can work with it. And this the way it's the way to bring it actually also to the organization, right? Because it exists. how we are working with it instead of being managed by our emotions. Because once we are not connected to our emotions, actually we are acting upon them without knowing what we are doing. But once we pause and reflect and connect to ourselves, we can really navigate our life and our inner life the way we want to and achieve our goals.
Part 3. Busy people need to pause and create space. Socrates is associated with the quotation, "The unexamined life is not worth living." I think the quotation is a nice way to introduce some advice that Karen has for us on becoming more effective at leading. Here's Karen with her advice.
Create space for yourself. Begin by taking time off to be with yourself. You can put in the calendar 30 minutes twice a week. Go to nature. Create space for reflection. Be with yourself, because it's not a common practice for leaders, right? And managers, they're really busy, busy, busy. But in order to connect to ourselves, we need to create space and to listen to ourselves. Otherwise, we don't pause. The second thing I offer is do things that fuel you. It can be meeting a friend, going to coffee, going to nature, hiking, dancing, whatever makes you feel good. Because it's important, you know, it's like the car that has fuel. We also need this fuel in order to keep on moving and being in a good shape and energized. The last thing I want to give advice is create space for meeting new people, new opportunities. So each month, create a new meeting with someone you don't know. And, you know, it enables place to new opportunities to emerge, for surprises to occur. So this is actually my 3 tips.
Creating space for meeting new people, it does open up new opportunities. This could be something as simple as when you connect with someone on LinkedIn, just getting to know that person informally, whether through a chat or Zoom meeting or something like that. Mm-hmm. 3 years down the road, that person may be just the right person to have connected with. That person could be, if you lose your job, that person could be a source of another job, or may come back to you and introduce an opportunity that other person thought about you. This is one of my leadership practices that I talk about, is getting out and learning as much about other people and meeting other people. It brings in new thinking. It expands your perspective. It can be really powerful.
That's so true. Yes, creating space for the unknown, for opportunities. Because, you know, it's actually being in the being mode. You know, in the new leadership, we're talking about the tension between the doing mode and the being mode. Because as leaders, we learn that we need to be in the doing mode all day long, right? Have the right resource, be busy. And I think what we learn now is actually as humanity and individuals and managers is the ability to pause and listen and reflect and hold this tension between the doing and being mode. Creating space for meeting new people actually enables you to be present without an agenda, but you actually don't know what will emerge from it. And you're creating a space for opportunities to emerge in the near future, maybe in the long future. But yeah, I agree with you. It's important.
Going back to your first point about creating space and making that difference between doing and being, it's so easy to get caught up in the work. There's always more work. It will never stop. There will be always demand.
Right.
The higher in an organization, that just increases, and it becomes even more important to consciously schedule time for you to be alone and be reflective. If you're constantly going, you get caught up in so much stuff, you begin to lose some perspective.
That's right. And I think a challenge leaders face nowadays is actually also to put boundaries, right? To say, okay, this is the time. It looks not important, but it's important for me, and not to let it go, because the first thing that we let go is of this time, right? In order to be for the others and to the task they need. But actually, the pausing effect and the ability to reflect in a paradoxical way can increase their productivity afterwards. It's holding this tension and not letting go of the ability to only pause and be present without doing even for 30 minutes.
That reminds me of the Pomodoro principle, where you would work for 25 minutes, you would stop for 5 minutes, do it again for 25, then stop for 5, then do it again for 25, and then you'd stop for 25. It's just a way of giving you mental breaks in your work, and you can become a lot more productive in what you're doing, just doing it that way. taking longer pauses throughout your week is critical to break up the work. It allows you to be more reflective. And I agree, it helps you be more productive.
Yes, you know, you can also take only 10 minutes, go outside to nature around the office and come back. You can find these small pauses that will enable you to get out of the situation and to clear your mind and come back much more fresh. So yes, this is a great technique.
My thanks to Karen Zook. If you'd like to learn more about Karen, go to the show notes. And I hope Karen's stories and advice has helped you develop and even reflect on how you lead. Leadership involves a lot of change. And as the great Alan Watts once wrote, the only way to make sense out of change is to plunge into it, move with it, and join the dance. This is Gary DePaul, and until next time, lead on.